here.
Hey, welcome to the Edge Television Broadcast, Doctor.
Excellent. I'm not getting a full picture, but I'm here.
Okay, well, you're a full picture here, and you're looking good with that excellent backdrop. Dr. Richard Proctor, welcome to the program. Now, I understand you've been on the Doug Hagman Show quite a bit.
Yes, I started the Doug Hagman Show in March, and I've continued there every week on Wednesday, usually, until now, okay? And then I've been on the David Knight Show on InfoWars for a year plus every other week.
That's great. And I'll tell you what, the topic tonight about the United States saving the Constitution is so relevant now that it's one of the, well, not really working too well, but it is supposedly one of our safest documents to keep us free in this country. But I think it's been rather ignored and its power has been reduced. So, Doctor, we want to talk to you about that. Now, how did you end up starting to research the U.S. Constitution to begin with?
Well, that goes back to, well, I guess I started researching all of the information that's been published. I started doing that in the 1960s, and I've been compiling information in my mind ever since and teaching and talking about these two subjects, i.e. the problems with the Constitution and the country, and the economics portions. Then in 2005, I began to write down all the information, and I began a newsletter. That newsletter developed for 6 years, and then in 2014, I began taking that newsletter to put together my volumes. And as I wrote my Liberty series, I kept thinking to myself, I must get a Constitution book written. I must do that, and I must go right back to the Constitution that was written in 1787 and explain and do that one. So as soon as I finished my econ books, I started in 2018, and started writing the Constitution book. Every paragraph, every phrase, it's put together in such a way that you can follow the book all the way through. You can see where you are as you look at the pages. You can see what article, section, paragraph you're at. All you have to do is look at it as you page through it. Then I went through all the amendments, did the whole thing. And I went in a way of first by saying what the founders wanted to say. I have a reference book here, 5 volumes, 8.5 by 11, 2 inches thick each of them, small print, double columned, that gives I don't want to say complete, but a very good analysis of all the stuff that went on in the convention, in the Philadelphia Convention. So here we are in the Philadelphia Convention. It's going along. They're doing their thing, and they decide to. Well, let me just explain one thing that happened there. The convention almost broke apart during that period because the small states and the big states, or the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, as it came to be known, the small states and the big states could not come to a reasonable decision on how many representatives each House representative should represent. That was a breaking point. It almost stopped the whole convention. You want a good thing about that? There's a video called A More Perfect Union, which is available, and that gives the story of what I'm talking about and the difficulty of that particular issue. The last week, one of the founders said, why don't we do 30,000? And they agreed. So it was intended that each representative would represent 30,000 people. And they wrote that in Article 1, Section 1, Section 2, Paragraph 3. You can see it right there. As you turn the pages, you'll see 30,000 per representative. Now, in 1790, when the census was taken, they violated that and went to 50,000. That soon, they ignored the Constitution and went to 50,000. And it just happens to be that 50,000 was the number that the big states wanted in the first place, and the small states were fighting against it. Now they've got 50,000. That went on and grew, it grew up slowly. Civil War was 50 to 60 until then. After the Civil War, it grew until it was up in the hundreds. And in 1920, the census gave it it should have given it somewhere around 2,500, but in actuality, it had 435. In 1929, the Congress passed a law that says we're going to cap it at 435. That law does not supersede the Constitution. Article 4, Section 1 says the Constitution is the authority of the land. And any law that Congress passes that's in accordance with the Constitution becomes law. But if it's not in accordance with the Constitution, it does not. Mm-hmm. So that 29 law doesn't apply, or it shouldn't apply, but we did it anyway. Now we have 435. Now the convention broke apart on the argument between 30,000 and 50,000. Today, it's 750,000 per representative. That's why they won't listen to us. That's why we can't get anything done, because we don't have any say, because those guys listen to 750,000 people to make their decisions. They make their decisions on what they want to do, not what we want, because we can't get a voice to them, and they don't pay any attention. Mm-hmm. They watch the money. So that's why, you know, we say the Constitution's been breaking apart. It started in 1790. That was the first major violation of our Constitution.
Mm. And they seem like they've been violating our Constitution ever since. Is the Constitution the last safe, best document to keep us free, or is it totally irrelevant now?
Oh, it's the last best to keep us free. If we would follow the Constitution, just so simply, if we were just follow what it says. Let's just take one amendment. You guys know about the 16th Amendment. That's the IRS. That's the income tax. That's the tax bill. I don't know if you're familiar with Black's Law Dictionary. Black's Law Dictionary is the legal dictionary, okay? That's the one the attorneys use. And the Supreme Court has gone through and defined things over and over and over. In fact, they convoluted the definitions. But if you take the definition of an amendment and you strip off all the the Supreme Court decisions that are encased in it in parentheses, strip that all out, you'll find that there are two types of amendments: court amendments and contract amendments. If we strip out the court amendments and leave just the contract rules, the laws about contracts, if we just strip out it down to that point, contracts that are written and signed by two parties, or three parties, however many parties they are, have certain rules. One rule is amendments can add to the contract. Amendments can correct errors in the contract, but amendments cannot alter the wording of the contract at all.
Mm-hmm. Doctor, by the way, a few more people joined us in the live chat. Scott Richardson, Overbill Automotive, and Kimberly Miller, all welcome to the early edition of the show. Doctor, I saw in our live chat, which is running right now, this is from Australia, and Ben didn't send it in. But he says, if America falls, so does the world. So is the Constitution, obviously, it has a target on it. If the government arrests somebody and it's unconstitutional, why is it that we can't claim a passage from the Constitution for our freedom, whatever that is, say First Amendment, you know, right to free speech? Why can't we claim that and get out of jail? Why is it we still remain in jail if they decide they don't like what we're saying?
There's really a two-part to that. The very, very first and most important part is we've reneged on our responsibility to do it. We do not do anything. We just sit back and say, oh, well, since the Supreme Court said it, since the government said it, since the EPA said it, since whatever said it, even though it's in violation of the Constitution, we just accept it and move on. The next part of that is, even if we didn't accept it, how can we get any power in the justice system? It's also, shall I say, prejudiced. Now, the question is, how does that occur? And that goes back to a simple organization we call the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve. That is the bane of our existence today. It's the worst thing that ever happened. We should put black cloth around the year 1913. Black cloth around that year. If we could just go back and erase that year, we would have saved our country much grief. First thing that happened in that year was the passing the amendment, the 16th Amendment. First thing that happened, Why? Because the 16th Amendment placed the tax burden directly on the people. The Constitution says, and I'm going to read from it here. I want you guys to literally hear what I'm reading. Good. Listen up. Representatives and direct taxes. Did you hear that term, direct taxes? Shall be apportioned among the several states which may be included within this union, according to their numbers, which shall be determined by the whole number. A lot of stuff goes on. Okay. Representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned. Now let's go to the 14th Amendment. Little 14th Amendment out here. Let me see. I've got to fix this up a little bit. 14th Amendment says, and I'm going to read it, and I want you to listen close to see if you can see something that was different. Representatives shall be apportioned among the several states according to their respective numbers. What happened? What did that amendment do? It laid the groundwork to remove direct taxes from the states and put them on the people. And the Supreme Court, in their wisdom or their prejudice or whatever it is, said in 1916 that that's constitutional. So this is what I wrote that that amendment should really say. I'm going to read it out of my book, Saving the Constitution. I like to read things so people can, if they want to. If you have the books, I recommend everybody get these books. They're the only way you can learn the Constitution today. There's no class that teaches it. Nobody goes by what the original Constitution is. They all go by the adulterated version of the Supreme Court. The actual amendment, as it's applied today, would read like this. The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived, no matter what the Constitution of the United States says. Now, that's what the amendment says, really. What it says actually is, this Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states. There's a violation of Article 1, Section 2, Paragraph 3, because that was where it said it had to be apportioned, without apportionment among the several states, and without regard to any census or enumeration. And that violates Article 1, Section 2, Paragraph 3 also. So you have that right there, easily read, easily understood, that it violates the Constitution as written. It is not constitutional. So what can we do about it? Well, we can raise up, we can yell and scream and holler and whatever. Let me give you a huge, hugely difficult, but can be done process. The first step you have to do is understand the state's rights. The state's rights are very clear, and they have everything, every right that's not listed in the Constitution. It's not. Let me say that over again. I'm going to read Amendment 10 so we can get it right. I don't want to confuse the issue here. Amendment 10 says, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states and the people. Now, just a minute. What does that say? If there is a power, well, what? Social Security. I'm going to pick on one. Social Security, not delegated to the United States and not prohibited by the states, is reserved to the states. Therefore, Social Security, if it's going to be done at all, is done by the states, not the federal government. That's what that says.
All right. Well, Doctor, let me ask you this question here. We were talking about states' rights, and a lot of talk and arguments are going on across the country about reparations, about this, about that. Was the Civil War fought over states' rights or slavery?
It started over states' rights. That's where it started. It didn't change to slavery until about 2.5-3 years into the war. States' rights was the big deal. South was mad because the North had tariffs, and the North commanded the trade, and they were getting the shaft in the South, and they didn't like that. They were having trouble selling their cotton, having trouble getting things back, and so they were angry. And that's what the Civil War was about in the beginning, money, mm-hmm. Economic trade.
All right. A question come from Australian Ben in our live chat. It says, Doctor, does Black's law represent the law of the land, whereas maritime admiralty law is the law of the seas. Why are these two different laws?
Oh, well, that's a whole different thing. Again, admiralty and maritime law is the law that is the high seas. That's what it's about. Captains on a ship, they have the right to demand that one of their workers get up there and take care of something. In the days of yore, when this was written, they were climbing masts and furrowing and unfurrowing sails, and it had to be done immediately. Well, that same kind of problem exists today, but it's in a different way. But let's use that example. Captain turns to the seaman Jones and says, "Seaman Jones, get up the top of that mast and fix that royal sail at the top." "Nope, I ain't gonna. I told you to go do it. I'm not gonna." He then has the power to throw that guy in the brig. He's the judge. He's the prosecutor. He's the defender. He's everything.
Could he throw him
brig?
Could he throw him overboard?
He'll assign somebody else to do it.
Could he just throw him overboard?
What?
Could he throw him overboard rather than in the brig?
They did. They did keel hauling. Yes, they did. They hung people by the mast, by the yard arms. Yes, they did. Captains had power, complete power. That's admiralty law.
Mm.
Now, what I'd like to recommend is that somebody go to the court tomorrow for on their speeding ticket. Who sits there? Is there a jury? No. It's a judge. The judge listens and says, "Okay, you're guilty. Here's the fine." Hold the phone. We're not a maritime court. The judge is acting as a commander on a ship. That's not right. Let's go to one of the amendments. This is the Sixth Amendment. This is the Seventh Amendment. In suits at common law, where the value in the controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved. Now, what is common law? Common law is the opposite to admiralty and maritime law. Maritime law and common law, I mean maritime law and admiralty law, the captain is in charge, period. Common law, a jury decides. When you go to court and you don't have a jury and the judge decides, you are in an admiralty court, and she is assuming complete power, or I shouldn't say she, the judge is assuming complete power over you.
Well,
That's not constitutional.
That right there reminds
me. Common law country.
Well, Dr. Proctor, that reminds me of what's just in the last few days, the Supreme Court under the dictatorship of John Roberts reversed or blocked Donald Trump, the president of the United States, from rescinding a previous executive order. Obama made an executive order. So here's the deal. Obama gets to make an executive order, but Trump can't reverse that executive order. How can that be?
It's complete. Both of those, both the original executive order and the order to rescind it, are unconstitutional. But the order to rescind it, or at least fix it, but now the Supreme Court, where they have no authority whatsoever, jumps in, and that takes the going back to Article 3 and listing the powers that the Supreme Court has. We're jumping around a little bit, but today's the first day I've been on. So we're going to cover more subjects so you get the idea of what goes on in the book Saving the Constitution and in my other books. Section 1 of Article 3 says the judicial power. Section 2 of the Article 3 says the judicial power. So evidently they wanted to define the power of the judges, the federal judges. This is a federal constitution. This does not define the power of the state judges. Remember that. This is a federal constitution. The state constitutions define the power of the state judges. The judicial power shall extend in all cases in law and equity arising under this constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. Now, let's not worry today right now about what this laws of the United States, treaties, and all that means. But what it does say is it has to be the judicial power extended to law, not executive orders, to law. Now it defines what they can look at when they're looking at the law. To all cases affecting ambassadors, 1. To all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, 2. To controversies over which the United States shall be a party, 3. To controversies between two or more states, 4. Between a state and citizens of another state, 5. Between citizens of different states, 6. Between citizens of the same state, 7. Claiming lands under the grants of the states, and between a state or citizens thereof, 8 powers. nothing more. Did you hear anything in there that said that they had the power to decide whether a law passed by Congress and signed by president can be deemed unconstitutional?
No, and in fact, the executive order is not even a law, so how can that be adjudicated about its constitutionality from the Supreme Court?
They can't do it, but they do it anyway because they are the nine emperors. That's why they wear black robes, so they can emperor above us.
That's just an illusion. That's an illusion of power. We have a black robe with some skid marks, and therefore you have to obey what we're saying. It's really freaky. Another thing, Doctor, even if it was a law, they've made plenty of rulings that seem to be based on emotions. Like for instance, the DACA. President Trump didn't consider the people that could be hurt, that they could be crying, and you know they could have pain. Where does in the law does it says a judge must take into account when ruling the constitutionality of a law? Where does it say you have to take into account feelings and emotions?
It never says that. It never says it. You can't use a bias. You can't do that. That stems from a man named John Marshall, John J. Marshall, 1803. The case was Marbury versus Madison. I'm going to paraphrase a little bit of that decision, but not very much. You can read it for yourself. Marbury versus Madison, 1803. The decision says any law passed by Congress that's against the Constitution is unconstitutional. That is precisely correct because Article 6 says it is. And we, using judicial review, will decide what's constitutional or not. Wait a minute. The Constitution doesn't give him that power. Therefore, that's unconstitutional. So he says anything coming from the federal government that is is a law that's incorrect is unconstitutional, mm-hmm. But I'm going to do something that's not in the Constitution either, so that's unconstitutional, and that's circular reasoning, but nobody pays any attention to that. They just say, Marbury versus Madison. We now have the power to judicially review all laws. And that's where it comes from.
The Constitution
declares. Attorneys will argue till they're blue in the face that Marbury versus Madison gives the Supreme Court the right to determine the constitutionality of a law. Thomas Jefferson, 1820, wrote a letter saying, "Yes, I've got the letter on my information. Anybody, I have the letter. This letter says, I'm going to not read the whole thing. I'm just going to mention what it says. It says, the judges have prejudices the same as the people. Nine people with their prejudices do not constitute authority to override the Constitution. The people are responsible, and if they don't have the knowledge, then the attitude, the situation is to teach them, not take it away from them."
Okay.
And he has pegged it perfectly.
All right. Well, Doctor, you brought up the name of Thomas Jefferson, which is now in the hit list. It's in the cancel culture circles right now, claiming that he was a slave owner, therefore the Jefferson Memorial should be burnt down, and everything that has Jefferson in it should be eliminated, including himself in every statue and portrait. Was Thomas Jefferson a racist?
Absolutely not. He treated his slaves with justice and care. He would have freed them, but the law didn't allow him to do it. We don't know those things. We never learn the things that were existing at the time. Thomas Jefferson was one of the finest founders we've got. And as soon as they stop, if they succeed in blasting Thomas Jefferson and getting him out of the way, they'll then pick on George Washington or Abraham Lincoln. Oh, I'm not sorry. They pick on him already. Benjamin Franklin or any of the others. They've got to destroy our history. They've got to destroy our Constitution. It's a one world order goal. Destroy the United States and its Constitution and its Republic. Destroy these things. And way to destroy stuff is to change history and destroy history. That's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't stand up for these things, we, the quiet majority, we're going to be saddled with a one world order dictatorial system.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, guys, we're on the road. If we don't fix it, we've had it.
And of course, the Second Amendment is one of the first amendments they would like to eliminate. They basically are trying to outlaw the Second Amendment by these various edicts across the country with these rules and regulations trying to regulate the Second Amendment, I guess you could say. But that seems to me that once that's out of the way, then it's wholesale on for everything else.
Yes, it is. But let me mention something that people don't realize. Again, I'm back to the real document, the Constitution of the United States, Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 15. Congress is to provide for the calling forth of militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repeal invasions. A militia. Well, how about that? 16. Congress is to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia. Wait a minute. What did that say? That says that Congress is responsible for allowing the states to organize a militia, and they will buy the guns. The Constitution says it. That's what it says.
Wow.
Remember, all we got to do is go back there. Mm-hmm. It's the only part of the Constitution that's really brought out in the amendments. In the Second Amendment, it is just saying we are authorized to have those guns.
Okay,
now, let's read the Second Amendment a little closer. Okay. What it says is, first four words, a well-regulated militia. The next words, be necessary to the security of a free state. What is a state? When that was written, that word meant the colonies of Virginia, New York, West Virginia, all of those. They were colonies, but they were going to be states. So this says a well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of a free state. That's the first phrase. Why don't we ever look at that phrase? The militia is necessary for a free state. If Seattle had a militia, this problem downtown Seattle would not occur. Wouldn't have occurred in the first place. What is a militia? 1828 dictionary is very clear. Every able-bodied man, and in our society that means every able-bodied person, and I don't care about the change of that. Every able-bodied man is a part of the militia. That's what the 1828 dictionary says a militia is. So when these guys wrote that, that's what they meant. Every able-bodied man. So if every able-bodied man in Washington State was in a militia, and the Seattle people that were in a militia, they would not allow these insurrectionists to destroy their town. They would go out and shut them down.
It should be updated to say every man, woman, and confused gender identity person. That way we can include, don't want to leave anybody out. All right, question for you says, if justice is pure, why don't judges wear pure white robes instead of black robes?
You know, I don't know why they wear black robes, but black usually stands for the bad guy.
Well, that's why I wear a white hat, sir.
Yes, I can understand that. The white hats, in the cowboy and Indian movies, the white hats were always the good guys and the black hats were always the bad guys. I don't know why they want to wear black robes. It labels them a certain way. Now, let's get back to something else about these problems in the federal government. And actually, it extends to the state government. These problems aren't just problems of not following the Constitution. The problem stems from who's controlling them. How do they get elected? How are they controlled? Who is choosing the people that we can vote for in our elections? If we look at Article 2, Section 2, it says that the Electoral College chooses them. Well, we don't have any idea what the Electoral College is supposed to do anymore. We think that it's only supposed to vote on who the state votes popularity for. That's not true. That's not what the Constitution says. The Constitution, as far as the election of the president, has not been used since 1796. The violations began in 1800 election, when the political parties took over the election process. And they became the Electoral College. And they decide who we get to vote for. The political parties. You don't get to. I don't get to. Nobody that votes can vote for who they want to. They can only vote for those people choose. So we talk about the worst evil. You know, if it was done properly, okay, new subject, this is a big one. If it was done properly, I won't read it. It's a long section. I will just paraphrase what it says. Electors are selected by the state. They are represented. The numbers of them is determined by the number of senators and the number of House members there are in the Congress. Well, first you have to know how many House members, but let's not do that right now. Then the electors are to meet in their various states. That's what it says. And they are to vote, or I would put the word nominate because that's what they're really doing. They would nominate two people. One of them can't be in their own state. So West Virginia sits there, and their electors gather in the Electoral College of their state, gathers in oh, I don't know, the state house someplace, a building, a meeting, the people selected gather, and they each select two people. Those numbers are consolidated and sent to the state. The state puts all those numbers in a sealed document and sends it to Congress. The pro tem of the Senate leader, not the vice president, but the pro tem of the Senate, opens those letters, sealed letters, in the presence of the Congress. And they put up a big board and say, John got 3, Mary got 4, Mike got 5, and they add them all up and come up with a number. Then they add up and see how many there were, and then they see how many each person got in relation to the majority. Do you notice something? There's no media involvement. There's no rigmarole circus. There's no lying and cheating and stealing. We have statesmen nominating people who they think would do a good job, not people going out there buying folks and buying votes and getting on the news and getting on the internet, getting in the media and yelling and screaming and talking about and looking good and promising the future. No, none of that. It's supposed to be done by the Electoral College, and the Electoral College would then vote, select, nominate 2 people each, and they would all go and be counted. Then there's a whole bunch of rigmarole in the section about what happens if the majority is not reached, and what happens then, and there's a majority is not reached, it goes to the House of Representatives. Each state gets 1 vote. This is all very clear. It's not based on population, just each state gets 1 vote, and they determine who the president will be. Yeah. That's how it's done.
Okay, well, Doctor, let me break in here.
The parties have destroyed our country.
Okay, so how is it that the party of diversity, as claimed to be the Democrats, passed up 4 black Americans, 4 or 5 women, and even a homosexual to get this cracker dude named Joe Biden who can't put a sentence together? How did they manage to get that guy to be their nominee?
It's all pegged, planned, and done. Doesn't matter a bit who votes for who. Doesn't matter what the people do in their states. It's all fixed. It's all fixed. It's decided before the event occurs. Unless the people absolutely refuse the guy, then they decide on someone else. But it's the political party that decides, not the people.
What do you think about all the talk about this mail-in ballot business?
Okay, now, you see, that goes right back to what I just said. We shouldn't even have a ballot at all.
Well, since now that's probably not going to change, we might as well talk about it.
Yes, I understand. I know that. I understand it's not going to change. I'm just pointing out how serious we violated the Constitution. It has caused the entire problem of our state, of our federal government and our state governments. We have thrown it in the trash barrel. We claim to say it's the law of the land, and then we don't follow it at all. So what do I think about mail-in ballots? That all depends on the honesty of the openers, the honesty of the people that are counting. It all depends on whether or not they have to be registered. If they can register the same day they vote, then that's absolutely horrid, because I can register over and over and over again in county after county after county, and no one would know. I could go to every county, register, and vote in every county in the United States. There are 3,000 counties. I could do 3,000 votes. That's what mail-in ballots portend.
And that's, of course,
that's what it could be.
And as we've all seen in almost every election, boxes of ballots just show up out of nowhere. They find them in warehouses, and all these boxes they find all seem to be voting for one particular party. Isn't that strange?
Yes, it is, and we pretend like we should go around the world and monitor other people's elections. Balderdash. Mm-hmm. We should be monitoring our own, mm-hmm. but we won't do that, because then the wrong people will get elected. Because the people in power in Congress control who's going to be elected. The whole thing comes back to, why do these people do it? And what's the basis? What's the foundation for all of these people to select who they want to select and do what they want to do? How does that happen? Well, let's talk a little bit. This is a little bit of fiction. Perfectly exact to what happens, but fiction. The elections occurred for the House of Representatives and the Senate. The freshman senators and representatives arrive in Washington, and they're met with open arms. And the powers in the Congress, both House and Senate, will sit down and group meetings, however, and welcome these people and say, we are so glad to see you guys here. We really appreciate what you're here, and you will undoubtedly bring new light and new ideas and new breath to this Congress. And we want to help you in every way we can. We will help you get committees. We will help you do all these things so that you can wield power back to your states and help your states and help us as an organization. Now, for us to do that, we're just going to ask you to do one little thing. When we have something we need voted a certain way, we would like you to vote that way. Because if you don't, we won't support you and you won't get back in the House
right.
or the Senate. Now, I'm sure that goes on. Every new person. In Utah, we had a young lady who really told a good story, and she had been a good mayor, and she really told the story, and I voted for her. Yes, sirree, I did. And she was elected. Oh, boy. She got there. 1st of January, she showed up. By the 5th of January, she had violated her promises to the people. Violated them 5 days. What? 5 days? That's all it took her? Why? Folks, that's because she had that little speech, and she wanted to stay in power in the House.
Mm-hmm. Doctor, you're in Utah, right?
Yes.
So how is it y'all voted for Mitt Romney?
He's a Mormon.
How many wives he got?
Oh, he just has one at the moment.
Okay.
But the point is, he's a Mormon. And the Mormons vote for Mormons. Solidarity. They don't care what he did in Massachusetts. They don't care all the flip-flops he does. They don't care what he is, what happens. They're going to vote for him because he's a Mormon. That's the same reason they're going to vote for John Huntsman to go back and become governor. He's a Mormon. Aha, get him. Yes, sir, we'll help him.
Mm. Hey,
I'm sorry to say that, but that's how it happens. That's how it works. Right out here in good old Utah.
So is polygamy legal out there?
No, it isn't. It was once, but it isn't today.
Okay. Now, the general feeling in Utah.
What a question. You know, we based upon what's going on with marriage, i.e. the whatever that's called, that lets the homosexuals marry, and they can marry whatever they want. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, we can have people marrying dogs, I suspect. So if a guy can marry a guy and a girl can marry a girl, why can't two other people marry mm-hmm. under the same law?
Mm-hmm.
Never mind.
Okay, well, that's an interesting question you posed, because my follow-up question was, Doctor, is Michelle Obama a man?
Is he a man or not? Is he a man with fortitude or a man at birth?
At birth.
I don't have any idea, and I don't want to speculate.
Okay.
I don't like to speculate about things that I can't even come up with any rational conclusion. I know he's a Muslim.
I love speculating, man. It stirs up all kinds of stuff. I just make stuff up. In fact,
yes,
I made stuff up.
Right, you can't. Everybody else does. Why not? I mean, making stuff up is the thing of the day.
Right.
The Supreme Court does it every day. They make up rights. They make up stuff. And they're the big dudes with the coats on, so they know what they're doing, of course.
Now, some people,
obviously you and I can do it,
now,
even
some
though
people,
we're not as smart as they are.
Some people think I made this up in the ranting points. They think I made it the bottle of Aunt Jemima syrup had Colin Kaepernick's face in there, and they think I made that up. I don't know where they got that from. Why don't they believe me?
I'm not even quite sure what you just said.
Neither am I, Doctor.
I know about Aunt Jemima syrup, but I don't know what you just said.
Okay, well, you don't have to know that. That's a good thing you don't, because that keeps you safe. All right, back to the Constitution. Now, a lot of people hate the thing, but recently we had this COVID thing, and every governor and city mayor across the country just decided they have authority over everybody's life, everybody's business, and including. Making laws respecting the establishment of religion. That's clearly in the Constitution. Nobody was safe. They were roughshod riding over the Constitution. How is that possible?
Because we didn't stand up. I'm sorry. It all goes back to we the people don't do anything. We just sit around and say, okay, that's fine. If I got to wear a mask, I will. If I got to stay 6 feet apart from people, I will. Oh, no, they want me to do it. They're right. We won't stand up and do something. That's why.
Okay, so we need America. Decent Americans need a leader.
Who's
out there that can do it?
Yes, they can do it. If we can get a leader that would stand up and say these kinds of things mm-hmm. and could could gather the people around him, we could begin to get this thing taken care of. The very first state is to get militias in every state.
Well, it certainly won't be a leader like the head of Chick-fil-A. He's certainly not a leader. He's kissing people's boots. So I don't know about that.
We need a charismatic leader like George Washington. Like him.
Do you think now... There's a book written, and you may have heard of it. I think it's called The Providential Life of George Washington. And in this book, it has a series of events that happened to George Washington that seems as if providence, had interfered and protected him. And it was mysterious to a lot of people why things went a certain way, but it seemed that there was somebody watching over him. Do you think in this time of confused America... that somebody that this providence may raise up another George Washington, or are they those kinds of people done forever?
I would say it depends on whether or not the Lord is fed up with our wickedness. Did I say that? Yes, I did. If the Lord feels that this place needs to be saved, he will bring up someone who can be that leader. Is it Trump? Could be. He's sure. You know, in this last election where these Democrats are yelling and screaming that she got the popular vote, well, people don't realize there's about 3,300 counties. She got about 300. He got 3,000. Is that a popular vote?
Well, they consider that Trump stole the election. John Kerry just recently said if Trump wins again, he obviously has stolen the election because Democrats believe by right they own the presidency. And if somebody else gets it, then it's stolen from them. They're predicting
they
a revolution.
Believe. Absolutely. They're communists in power. That's what they are. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I don't know why anybody today is a Democrat. I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody.
Well, because they're
why
offered.
Why would you want to be a part of a party that lambasts God, that worships abortion, that worships Satan, that does everything they can to destroy the Constitution and the country? Why do they want to belong to that? I don't understand it. But let me explain something that does happen. People that are fed up with the Republicans and the Democrats, and I was one of them, they wander out and become independent, and they actually brag about it. I'm an independent. Well, you know, those people don't realize something. When you become an independent, you have given up your voting franchise except for the president. You can't vote for anything else, really. I know you can vote for those people, but you've given up your franchise. The independents cannot put a person on a ballot. You have to be in a party. You cannot put a person on a ballot if you're not in a party. Therefore, you cannot put someone you would want on the ballot. But if you would join a party, you could. Then you could put someone you want on the ballot. But if you try to do it in the DNR, they've got so much power and so many people, you could never get that person on the ballot. Mm-hmm. So you got to be in a different party. That there's got to be one you can be in. Libertarians, they're a little bit too liberal for me. Green doesn't care. The Socialist Party is already existing. But one party that does exist that needs help is the Constitution Party. And that party wants to get the Constitution back in force. They want to get the country back the direction it's going. But people don't join it. And I don't understand that. They become independents and lose their franchise. If they join the Constitution Party, they could be on the ballot and even elected for Congress. Well, maybe even that. But they could be elected in state jobs over and over and over again. All we have to do is have people run and have people vote for them. And they become a state senator, a state house representative. You can't do it if you try to be a DNR. You're lost out. But if you become independent, you're lost out. But if you went to the Constitution Party, you could join that party and run for office every election cycle. I've done it ever since 2006. I've run for auditor. I've run for auditor again, run for treasurer, and I'm running for treasurer again this year. I've been on the ballot every year for the last four elections.
Nice. Maybe I need to run for something, man. I'm going to start the cowboy party. All right. Ben, Australian Ben says...
Network connection.
You still there?
I'm still here. Are you?
Yeah. All right. The question is, can The Rock become the leader after Trump? Can he unify and inspire a constitutional revival? Now, I'm going to answer that question because you may not know who The Rock is. I think he's talking about Dwayne Johnson. Now, of course, now Jesus is also described as a rock, so unless he's running, I don't think he is. But if it is Dwayne Johnson, I would say no, because he's one just recently said there needs to be blood in the streets so he can get the hell out of here. All right, now here's...
I believe that, too. Get him out of here. I don't want blood in the street.
No. All right, so, and a lot of Democrats do. All right, our moderator, Jade, asked you this question, Dr. Proctor. Can you please speak to those that have given up voting altogether because they believe that the rats have already won?
Well, you know, I think that's a very... That is probably a sentiment of a lot of people in this country. The rats have already won. Well, I want to ask you a question. If all of these people, and there are lots of them, would band together, do you think maybe the rats haven't won? They only win because we give up and don't do anything. I'm sorry. Washington's forces, they lost. I mean, they were beaten. They were in Delaware starving to death. They'd been run across... They'd been run across New Jersey, been run across New York, and now they were over there on the other side in Pennsylvania, licking their wounds, and they were lost. And the enlistments were up on the 31st of December that year. And it was done. The revolution was over. It was done. They've lost. The rats had already won. And they had. Washington sat down with these forces, these officers, and they told him, we've lost. We can't possibly do anything. Those Hessians across there in Trenton, they're professional soldiers. We can't beat them. Oh, no, we've lost. We're done. It's over. He left that meeting. Now, I'm quoting from a book by Ron Carter, and it's called the Prologue to Liberty, I believe. Volume 3, I believe it is. I can get all that information from anybody that wants it. But he was sitting on it, despondent, sitting on his bed, despondent. What am I going to do? Took off his tunic, sitting there. What am I going to do? Pondered, and an idea came to him. Where did that idea come from? I don't know. An idea came to him. He sat down and furiously scribbled out the orders for everybody. Called all the major officers in. Now we're talking like the 23rd of December. Called in all the major officers. Said, this is what you got to do, and we got to do it tomorrow. Got to do it. And in essence, I'm going to paraphrase the book, but in essence, this was the Battle of Trenton. Washington had his groups. They all had to meet Trenton at the same time, 5 o'clock in the morning on the 25th, 24th. Made my head a day. Had to meet there, and they had to be ready for the battle. They had to meet there and battle with the Hessian soldiers. Well, it was time to go. The Delaware River was high tide. Ice was coming down. Two of the forces couldn't even get across. The only one that got across was Washington's force, and they were 20 miles from Trenton, north of Trenton. They got on that and slugged it down in that terrible, terrible blizzard. I mean, it was a terrible blizzard. They slugged it down. They didn't get into Trenton until way after 5 o'clock. It was coming on 7, 8 o'clock before they ever got there. And the other parts of the force didn't get there. But they got there. A bunch of scarecrows, no uniforms, rags on their feet, almost no weapons. I mean, they were in terrible, starving to death. And those soldiers put their minds to it, and they conquered that Hessian army, took them all prisoner, those that they didn't kill, with very few losses. And they triumphed and took Trenton, the Battle of Trenton. The same thing happened at Princeton, the Battle of Princeton, a few days later. This ragtag group beat the pride of the British Army and the pride of the Hessians. Why, they shouldn't have been able to do anything. Now, that's what I call divine intervention. I talk about that in Volume 6 of my series. I talk about divine intervention with Washington, D.C. I talk about the divine interactions with the Revolutionary War. Jesus Christ wanted this country saved and put together so that the Constitution could be written and freedom and democracy could be established somewhere in the world. And They succeeded. That ragtag army that was beat constantly succeeded, and the British gave up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a story for history.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me put it in today's terms then, because I say that now we're fighting a digital battle for the minds and hearts of Americans. We have the media, the government, and all the large social media giants are all conspiring to eliminate the rights and privileges of a ragtag group of Americans just sitting out here trying to do the right thing, trying to go to work, trying to. We're that ragtag army, the ones that don't go rioting and don't topple statues. We're sort of the ragtag army, but the well-trained, the high-tech, well-funded haters of America that are trying to undo America, they're the British now. So
yes.
Would you say that we have hope as a ragtag group of Americans out here, both black and white, who love this country, who want social, I don't want to say social justice, but we want justice and we want stability in this country. You think that we could have that same sort of divine intervention on our behalf? Because they are a tremendous foe. They have all the power. They have all the money. They have all the outlets and platforms to push their message on other people.
Yes, that's absolutely right. You've hit the nail right on the head. Let me prescribe how I would recommend it happen. Okay? The Constitution, I always go back to the Constitution. The Constitution says that every state officer, judicial, executive, must swear allegiance to defend the Constitution, an oath or affirmation to defend the Constitution of the United States. They've all taken that oath, but they're reneging on it also. The Constitution itself does not actually give power to the cities, communities, to organize their own militias without authority from the state or the federal government. But the Declaration of Independence does. The Declaration of Independence says very clearly, if a government begins to trump and destroy the inherent rights of God, then the responsibility of the people is to alter or abolish it. It doesn't just mean Britain. The Declaration of Independence is right there. That's the authority. The Constitution is written to put the Declaration of Independence into fact, to make it happen. Okay. So the Constitution is the law. The Declaration of Independence is the foundation. If the state won't do it, the federal won't do it, the community, the cities should do it. Organize community militias, not mobs, militias. How do you do that? The city sits down, the city planners, the city council, the mayor, sit down and they write a letter, a document that people can come in and sign, which authorizes them to be a part of the militia, and they volunteer to be a part of the militia. That becomes a legal document because the elected officials did it. We already have plans for disaster, for earthquakes, for flooding, for fire, for everything. Why don't we have a disaster of insurgents? Why don't we have something to protect us from insurgents, which is what we need? Right now, today, it's a little quiet, but who knows what will happen next week, mm-hmm. and it'll blow up again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too late then. It's like the people who are sitting in the house and a big hole in the roof, and the rain comes in. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy, this is terrible. I got to fix that. But I can't go up and fix it now because it's raining.
Thomas Jefferson.
Next week, the rain stops. I can't go up. I don't want to go up and fix it now. There's no rain. Don't need to. We're in that spot now. No rain. Don't need to. Organize these militias. Organize them for the community. Arm them. How are they armed? Their own weapons. But give them authority. If they go out, let's assume these guys in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Now, this is a good assumption. Those men showed up with weapons. And the bad guys went away with their tail between their legs. Mm-hmm. But if one of those people had fired a weapon at one of those ragtag guys that were bad and injured him or killed him, that person in that group would have been taken to prison and prosecuted for murder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, had he been a part of an organized militia, they would not do that because that's recognized by the elected power of the area.
Well, Doctor, that exact scenario did play out here recently, I believe, in New Mexico, where Antifa anarchists were trying to rip down a statue of a conquistador, and a militia did show up, and somebody did get shot, and they got him, and then they said that we're going to take everybody in that so-called militia, take all their guns and everyone they know, and send them all to prison.
Yeah, but they didn't have authority as a militia. People call themselves that, but that's not enough. You've got to have government authority giving you the authority to do that. Now you can do it. And if they get mad at you, you just point at the authority that gave you that power.
I don't think they're going to get that authority here. But let me ask something about Thomas Jefferson, where he said that the let me see if I get this exact quote here. The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It's a natural manure. Are we at the time of refreshment?
I think we are, but I don't want to admit to that right now. I don't want to say that we should get out and spill blood. I don't want to say that. But well, I want to go back to your statement just a minute ago. I don't think we'll get those militias organized. And that's the reason they're not.
Well, hopefully we don't have fear just reading a quote. And in fact, here's another question kind of along those lines. It says, how can America become her destiny of freedom without bloodshed? I guess maybe we need to stay away from that, because only because any kind of talk like that instantly becomes fodder for the other side, saying, you're a fearmonger, you're threatening, you know, you're a gun-toting kook and this kind of thing.
I am afraid that we may be headed that direction, but I hope that direction is done with legal militias, not just people who band together and call them one, call themselves one. Mm-hmm. They can't do that. That's just a mob with guns. They've got to have legal authority. Now they're a militia.
Well,
they can be organized if the people in a community would just do it. Those guys in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, they should now that they've done what they've done, get into Coeur d'Alene, into the city offices and say, look, we want to be deputized, authorized as a militia. Let's get it done. And then what they do is legal.
So all the church, we started talking about how the churches were told they cannot assemble and worship in the manner that they choose. How is it that the governors gave themselves the authority to dismiss the Constitution?
They gave themselves that. It's called color of law. Most people haven't heard about color of law. Color of law, defined in Black's Law Dictionary, is law that law that's passed, or not passed, but edict that put out without authority. You do it without authority because you have a government and you can. And you then send your police out to enforce this unauthorized law. That's color of law. Section 242 of Title 18 from the late 1940s says that if a legal officer, I don't mean illegal, I mean an elected officer, a government, state, city, anybody, begins to give edicts and laws and enforces them that in any way injures any person because of that law and that enforcement, any way injures them, then they're liable for fines and jail time, depending on the severity, fines in jail time for 1 year, fines in jail time for 10, fines in jail time for life, depending on the severity of what they do. It's all listed. Section 242, Article 18 of federal law. Passed in 48, or put in effect in 48. That's what the law says. We can convolute about it all day, but that's what it says. Now, what does an unconstitutional act mean? Anything that's against the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence. That's an unconstitutional act. Therefore, those people who hauled folks off to jail and because they've met, or a pastor wanted to hold church and they hauled him off to jail, that could be considered kidnapping, and he's got them on a big charge. The problem is you got to get a legal guy, an attorney and a judge, federal judge, that is honest. And that's tough, but that's what you got to do. That's the law. That is the law. Written in the books. Title 18, Section 242. Anybody can read it anytime they want.
Okay, question for you. How can one constitutionally reverse a Supreme Court decision?
How can you constitutionally do that? Okay, let's get back to where we were a long time ago on that subject. Remember I said you've got to have people being able to vote for who they want to, remember?
Mm-hmm.
All of these people who are independents, they should change their affiliation, I'm going to just say it bluntly, to the Constitution Party and become a part of the Constitution Party. Then, we're talking about the next election, not this one, it's all done. You can't get on a ballot now. The next election, they'll be prepared and ready to run for offices in the House and Senate. Governor, treasurer, auditor, lieutenant governor, those kinds of offices. Attorney general, those kinds of things. They're prepared to run for those offices. Then you have a powerful enough party, Constitution Party, to elect them. Now we've elected a group of people who are honestly trying to return to the Constitution. Now, I'm not going to say that every Constitution Party member is going to be an honest person. That would be whistling whistling in the dark. But the majority of them will be. And if they're not, they'll be booted out the next time by Constitution people who will figure out that they weren't. Okay? Now, those people will band together and they will do what's called nullification. Did you know? Do the people know that the states have the right to nullify laws of the federal government? Whoops, what did I just say? Nullify laws of the federal government? It's been done lots of times. Montana did it when Real ID came up in the mid 2000s, like 5 and 6. The Real ID thing came up to force everybody to have driver's licenses a certain way. This was government edict to control us. Montana said, we're not doing it in our state, and they didn't. They stood up, backs up, and by Jove, the whole thing went away because Montana and a couple of other states did that. If the states would nullify things from the federal government that are unconstitutional, it can't happen in our state, things would begin to change. Now, let me give you an illustration. Let's assume, I'm going to assume that Utah decides they're going to do that, and we do elect a legislature. Those people now are ready. The first thing they're going to do is organize a militia. That's the very first thing. The next thing they're going to do is organize a public citizens type bank. And it will not be affiliated with the Federal Reserve. And the profits that are made by that bank will stay in the state to arm the militia and take care of functions of the state and begin to reduce taxes of the citizens. Okay, that's the next thing. The next step, the very, very next step of this legislative body is to say, by Jove, the Constitution says that we have one representative in Congress for every 30,000 people. That's very clear. It's exactly what it says. There's nothing ambiguous about it. Therefore, we're going to set up districts in the state of Utah of 30,000 people. And those 30,000 people on the next election are going to elect representatives for Congress. One from each group, each district. So there'll be 100 guys go to the Congress, the U.S. Congress, House of Representatives. 100 guys from Utah. Now, Idaho is going to see that happening in Montana, New Mexico, Arizona. They're going to see that happening, and they're going to say, wait a minute, they're going to send 100 people? I'm not about to let them take over, because Utah would take over if they did that. I'm not about to let them take over. So they would follow suit. And they would figure out how many they're supposed to have, and they'd vote that many in also. It would be a domino effect because everybody wants the right, wants their power in Washington. But somebody's got to start it, so I'm starting it right here. So now, they probably won't get seated because the guys in Washington will say, you can't send 100 people here, we won't seat them. And we're going to say, our militia guys will go with them, by the way, and say, why not? Constitution says that. Well, yeah, but we passed a law in 29. You can't do that. Laws don't supersede the Constitution. If they change the Constitution or if they're not in accordance with the Constitution, they are null and void, so we don't honor that law. We're here, all 100 of us, and we're going to be seated.
Let me,
state did that, what would happen?
Well,
I got to continue now. We're not done yet. We're not done yet.
Okay.
I know you got other things you want to say, but I got to finish the subject. Okay, now, what we've got is we've got nullification of the 30,000 of the 756,000 rule, so to speak. Now, the next thing this group is going to look at is going to look at the senators. And he's going to say, by Jove, the Constitution of the United States says the states will not lose their representation in the Senate, and we don't consent to it. Therefore, there will be no more popular elections for senator in the state of Utah. We are nullifying the 17th Amendment. They can do that. They have power to do that. We're not going to do that in our state. It's contrary to the Constitution, contrary to the laws of contracts. We're not going to do that. We are not going to call the people home that are there now unless they're not following the Constitution. Then we're going to call those guys home and put new people in their place. Only two, but we'll have our two. All right. Then what are they going to do next? They're going to say, by Jove, the 16th Amendment is obviously against the Constitution. We'll nullify that. We'll nullify it by saying no person, business, or entity in the state of Utah will fill out a 1040 and send it to the federal government. Not one will do that. We pass a law. I won't do it. The IRS will come to me. You're going to throw you in jail because you didn't do it. Nope. The law of my state says that I cannot do that. We're going to supersede you. But our law supersedes. No, it does not. The Constitution does not give you the power to supersede something that's unconstitutional. So you can't do that. We are not going to do that anymore. And then the list gets long. BLM land, forestry land, all of that land, back to the states. People in the East don't understand what that means to the people in the West. But 2/3 to 3/4 of our states are owned by the federal government illegally. We want that land back. Mm. That's what these people can do to get our country back. And you know what? It would work. But the first thing it takes is a group of people, enough power to put good people that we can depend upon in office, in government office, in the states.
Can I ask a question now?
Yes, ask a question. I'm done.
Okay. I got to get your permission, man. Okay.
Okay, that's all right.
Okay.
Well, I take over these things all the time.
Okay, I got a quote from your hero, Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah, he's my hero. I worship him.
Here's the quote. The war in court wasn't that radical. It didn't break free from the essential constraints that were placed by the Founding Fathers in the Constitution. I intend to succeed where they failed.
Did Obama succeed?
That's the question.
No. Read the quote again for me.
The Warren Court wasn't that radical.
Oh, the Warren Court. Okay.
It didn't break free from the essential constraints that were placed by the Founding Fathers in the Constitution. I intend to succeed where they failed. There's a Constitution hater right there.
Yeah,
but did he succeed?
He's going to destroy the Constitution. His goal was to destroy the Constitution. I'm going to ask this question now. What did the Warren Court do that he felt they didn't succeed at? Or not do that the Warren Court didn't do?
You're about to tell us.
That's the civil rights stuff, isn't it?
Okay.
You know, we're in this problem. It isn't the Warren Court that's responsible for it. It's the people. It's the people that pass the laws. It's the people in Congress that pass the laws. The court doesn't have any authority to do anything in that issue. I'm sorry, you know, we keep going back to the court and its power doesn't have any. And back to the people. The people have got to fix these things. The people have got to.
Well, so let's talk about that. We were talking about, is there a leader out there that can marshal the country to restore order and the rule of law and the foundational principles of the Constitution itself? Either is there somebody, and then we're talking about, could we get divine intervention or empowerment for the common people? What spark do you see? Because telling people they can't go to church didn't do it. Telling people they could kill babies with abortion didn't do it. Business people they have to lose their businesses didn't do it. How far will America go before they rise up like the Continental Army and say, enough, enough, we're going to have to go after the enemy? And I'm not talking about guns here.
Already. And I believe the people that are doing it to us have wondered that also. This was simple. All we had to do was say it, and they all followed like lemmings. Boy, what could we do if we wanted to again? Mm-hmm. This is a dry run to see what we can get away with. By who? By the elite of the world. By the one world order people. By the people who want to destroy our Constitution and our nation. one world order. They want the United Nations to be the government of the entire world, everybody subservient to it. All power in the United Nations. Everybody else subservient to it. That's what they want. And we rolled over and said, okay, if that's what you want, that's what we'll do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you say,
I don't know why we did that. I'm absolutely aghast that people will still wear masks when they don't have to. They don't have to wear masks. I'm amazed that companies require employees to wear masks. I don't understand it. Those masks that they're wearing are absolutely worthless. They don't do anything. The only kind of a mask that will work, see, I study safety and for mining and things like that. The only kind of a mask that will work is strapped to the face, to the head, sealed to the face with filters on the sides, canisters. That's the only thing that will work.
Mm-hmm.
These little bandanas that people are putting on are of absolutely no good, of no worth, and they're not attractive either.
No, they're definitely not attractive. But I'll tell you, it seems that, as you said, that the American people easily gave up their rights when they said, you got to do this and that. And all of a sudden, everybody said, yes, sir. You know, we'll do whatever you want. They're saying that COVID 2.0 is coming. They're going to say, oops, it's here again.
Yes, we're going to do it again.
Now, the president says that he's not going to shut the country down again. I'm sure the left is committed to shutting the country down again. You think that would spark some kind of conflict?
Oh, yes, but I think what they'll just do is ignore Trump and just do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We got so many lefts in power in the judgments and all that kind of stuff, and the judges and the media. Oh my, that's the most powerful part of the mm-hmm. one world order, the media. They've mm-hmm. owned it since the mm-hmm. 20s.
Well,
and Morgan bought the media in the 20s, and they've kept a grip on it ever since.
Well, Doctor, my question is, when 2.0 comes, do you think Americans will so easily submit this time around, now that they may have realized it's been a hoax?
No, I do not think they will. I think that they will submit this time around just the same, because the average American does not realize it's a hoax, and they refuse to consider it.
Mm-hmm.
They refuse to consider it.
Mm-hmm.
The disease that we have today, and there is a disease, is less contagious than the flu, less dangerous than the flu. But we never did this for the flu.
Right, right. I think the people have been
completely gagged. And unless, like you're talking about, somebody rises up that can lead them, that they will follow, and then the people will follow it and form groups in every state and begin to get together and do things as a unit, mm-hmm. every state at the same time, we'll never do it. And one of the measurements is, will anybody set up a militia? That's a measurement. If nobody will do that, then nobody will resist the next COVID deal.
And I'm pretty sure it's coming too.
Oh, yes, me too. Well, they're already talking about the one that's going to come next. Oh, yes, they already are. And they're not going to wait very long. And at the same time, the Antifa guys are going to come in and start destroying cities again. Are we ready? Are we going to allow that? If we don't do something from the citizen grassroots level, and I term that establishing militias, because that's a legal entity to protect us. And if we're not going to do that, then we're going to mm-hmm. just bow down again and take the next one, and it'll be more restrictive than this one. And then we'll bow down and take the shots, and the shots will have things in them that will ensure that we can't leave the house unless we've had the shot, because they'll be able to tell. If you haven't had the shot, you won't have the what's in it. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you can't leave your home. And they'll do it with drones, and they'll do it with robots, and they'll do whatever.
They'll keep us confined.
That's confinement without a warrant or any conviction. They're just confined. Mm-hmm. They won't be able to work because they don't have it. They won't be able to buy stuff because they don't have it. And that's in the book of Revelations.
Well, let me ask you something, Doctor. Are you a member of the militia?
I would be the minute one was started. I'm not a member of a militia, I will be the minute it was started, even though I'm 79 and even though I do not have any weapons. I will join that group and support them in any way I can.
What about you yourself starting a militia yourself?
I have not gone down to the city to do that.
Hmm.
But I will. I'm going to.
Okay.
I haven't done it yet.
So we're looking forward to when you do that.
Oh, are you guys waiting for me? If I do it, then the rest of the country will?
You do it, I'll do it. How about that?
Oh, that's fair. Let's do that. I'll go down and see them. And then I'll report back to you so you can go down and see.
I want to
know how many people can we get to commit to do the same thing?
Well, Well, I'm all for it. We got to get this thing started. I'm right here in Indiana. It seems to me that in Utah, there's a lot of gun-toting people out there. Am I wrong?
Well, there are. Oh yeah, we got gun-toting people here. You bet there are. Yeah, the deer are concerned about it.
Uh huh. Are the deer out there running for their life?
Yeah. Well, they will be in deer hunting season.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you talk about tracking COVID. There's already in people's phones hidden apps, and so people are already being tracked, Doctor.
Yes, they are. Absolutely. I have purchased and have installed one of those keep your phone safe from the watchers.
Yeah, and so now do you turn your phone off, take the battery out? I mean, what kind of security do you put yourself in?
At the moment, I have only been turning it off. I thought that was satisfactory. Then I discovered it was not. So I'm going to put it in one of those bags. I never have it on except when I want to use it.
I'm going to put
it in one of those bags that seals it against it. I have those things for my credit card. You know those little chips?
Mm-hmm.
I have all the credit cards I carry. I have in a folder so that they can't read them or follow them. I keep my passport in one of those whenever I travel.
Are you talking about a Faraday bag of some kind?
Yes. Well, I'm not sure the name. The name, what it is, it's a bag that prevents these RFDI readings or RDIF or whatever that's called from penetrating. Mm-hmm. Can't do it. You can't read it. I'm just waiting for the arrival because they were short on them because everybody wants one.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're getting near the end of the broadcast, Doctor. Anything else you want to get out here while we still got some time on the air?
Oh, I think we have really covered stuff. I want to mention some things, though.
Okay.
We've talked about a lot of material here today, and I've just been talking off the cuff, reading out of the Constitution and talking about it. Now, I have prepared a very inexpensive book called Saving the Constitution.
Okay.
That picture's on the wall, isn't it?
It can
be acquired from Provis Institute of provisinstitute.com. That website has that book. All of my other volumes too, but the very most important book is Saving the Constitution. Now, I believe that every person who wants to save this country needs this book because nobody teaches the Constitution so they will understand it, even know what it says. And nobody points out all the errors that have occurred against our Constitution. This is the only book in the United States that does this job, takes the Constitution itself and teaches what it really says and points out all the stuff that's happened based upon what government has done to it.
Mm-hmm.
So this particular book is vital. And everyone should have this book, and then it doesn't do any good to put it on the shelf. Have this book and read it and understand what the Constitution says. And you will be amazed, folks, and how many things are in that we violated in the Constitution just because nobody does anything. Nobody reads it. People don't even realize how important Article 6 is because they've never read it. Article 6, very crucial. But we've never read it. People don't read that. The importance of Article 3 when it talks about the power of the Supreme Court so that we can get some control on the Supreme Court. No one ever reads it. No one reads the Constitution. They don't know what it says. And in some cases, it's very difficult to understand. For example, how many of you of the listeners know what corruption of blood means?
I've never.
How many know what ex post facto laws are? Just two questions. How many know what treason really works and how it's done? How many know how the president should be elected? I went over a few minutes ago. How many understood that? It's not hard to read.
Mm-hmm.
How many folks in the audience understand what the amendment process is? Have you heard about these con-cons, everybody says, and convention of states? That's all just a subterfuge to destroy our Constitution. That's all it is. If that group meets, our Constitution is lost. And the legislatures just keep passing approvals to ask for it. As soon as 3/4 of the states ask for that, they will organize it. They will pound the gavel. And we will lose our Constitution in its entirety. It will be gone. But nobody realizes that. Nobody understands what the Fifth Amendment says. There are three ors in the Fifth Article 5, not the Fifth Amendment, Article 5. There are three ors in Article 5, comma, or, comma, or, comma, or, three of them. Well, the first one says that the Congress can propose an amendment and have it ratified by the states. Or the states can ask for a convention to propose amendments. Or the states can have conventions of their own in their own states to pass amendments. And the third one is completely lost. Yet that's the one that they used to ratify the Constitution itself and the Bill of Rights. The third one was used for that purpose, but nobody even knows it's there. A Constitution of States is just another way to say a con-con. A con-con is a constitutional convention. That's what con-con means. Is the one that will happen will be set up to destroy the Constitution we have. The minute a con-con convenes and the gavel starts, they are free to do anything they want. They are free. That's the way it works. Constitutional conventions can do anything they want. When the Constitutional Convention met for the Articles of Confederation, they had been given specific instructions. The gavel dropped. They didn't follow them. When the Philadelphia Convention met, the gavel dropped, and they threw all those instructions out and wrote their own. When this one meets, the gavel will drop, and the one we have will be thrown out completely. And the government, they'll write a new one, and the rights of our rights will come from government, and government will take them away. Ratification won't be three-quarters of the states. It will be a committee in Washington, D.C. They will change the ratification, just like the Constitution that we now have changed the ratification of the Articles of Amendment. Articles of Amendment ratification was 100% of the states for the colonies, 100%. Well, when they went out, they changed it to three-quarters. This next one will change it to no states at all, the government in a committee, federal government in a committee. Folks, if that group meets, we've lost our Constitution that day. Then the only people that will have the Constitution are groups in areas that hold the Constitution up and say, this is what we're going to follow. We're not going to change our government. That is the only way it can be saved. And if those groups aren't there, it can't be saved. We'll lose our country. And on that prognostication, we have, let me see, what do I see on my little clock here? 7 more minutes. I could do more on that, those same subjects.
Mm. Well, we have one more question for you from Rose. Yes. Says, what about the Patriot Act? They're putting innocent people on watch lists without a warrant or due process.
That's right. The Patriot Act is completely unconstitutional. Completely unconstitutional. We only have it because we accept it. What did I just say? Again, we accept it. We are not putting up a fight about it. No state has nullified it in their state. Not one. Yet it's completely unconstitutional. They are putting people on watch lists. Who in this particular conversation is most likely to be on that watch list? It's me. But I can't check. I can show up the airplane. They say, you can't get it. You're on the watch. You can't get on the plane. Mm-hmm. You're on a watch mm-hmm. list. Mm-hmm. But I won't know it until that minute. Mm-hmm. And there's no recourse. Because the federal government has taken over our planes.
I mentioned earlier that people, I know with Android phones, probably with iPhones as well, Google snuck in a COVID-19 tracker, and I'm going to show it right here. People can see it. I don't know if they can see it on my phone or not. Let's see if I can bring that up. But right there it is, COVID-19. Google snuck it into the software. Make sure that if you have a Android phone, and even if you have an iPhone, make sure you're not being tracked by Google and then people under the guise of COVID tracking. It's just another tool the system is using to track us all. And you're right. And then, of course, if they say, hey, you went somewhere that you shouldn't have been, therefore your rights now have been eliminated and you have to do what we say. We're in a police state already, Dr. Proctor.
Oh, yes, we are. We are in a police state. And we can only solve it by doing some of the things I've talked about. You guys know, I maybe you don't know, we have a place in Bluffdale, Utah that's created by the government to keep track of all of this information. Everything that goes across the internet, everything that goes across the phone, everything that goes across your credit card, everything that they track in, any way they can track you, goes there on your account. And they have 3 zettabytes. One zettabyte's enough to record all the conversation of the world since the world started. 3 zettabytes. Bluffdale, Utah, to track and keep all that stuff. Mm. Yes.
Your book,
right here in my neighborhood.
Your book says saving the Constitution. Are you saying that it can be saved when people are equipped with the knowledge of the original intent and meaning of it? Or is there,
yes,
how are we going to save it? By knowing what's in it.
By knowing what's in it and then acting upon what's in it. Yes. But you cannot act on something you don't know. You can never fix anything that you don't know is broken. You can't do a thing until you know what's happened to it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you know what the Constitution says, you can't defend it. You don't have a right that you don't know you have. Interesting statement, isn't it? You mm-hmm. don't know. You don't have a right that you don't know you have.
Mm. Well, Dr. Richard
Proctor... Does it matter that there are 27 rights in the Bill of Rights?
Well,
if you don't know them, you
well,
don't
Dr.
have
Richard
them.
Proctor, we're out of time here, and obviously there's a whole lot more we need to cover concerning the Constitution. We need to get a lot more out of you. So can we have you back on a program here and talk again?
Oh, yes, any number of times you want. I'll come once a month. I'll come next week. Not next week. I'm busy. But I'll come the week after. But once a month is probably sufficient. You have more things to do.
Okay. All right. Well,
it's up to you. It's your show. I'll come anytime you ask.
Okay. Well, sure. We really appreciate you coming on the program. What did you think about it, your first time on the Edge broadcast?
Oh, I thought it went very well. I'm afraid that you were put out by my forcefulness in saying, stop, listen to me.
<That's>
but
fun.
It was fun. I get so carried away with these things.
You're passionate.
I want this information out.
No, you don't get carried away. You're passionate, and that's great. We all need to be more passionate about the Constitution.
Everybody needs to know that there's no shipping tacked onto my books.
Well, there you go.
They're $20, and I pay for the shipping myself.
Okay. And they can get it from the website link that we have on our website, right?
Yes, provisinstitute.com. Yes.
Okay. All right, Dr. Proctor, we'll schedule time for you to be back. I appreciate you coming on the show.
I appreciate being here. I get the word out. I want to do that. Thank
you. All right. Thank you so much. All right, everybody. That was...